The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Welcome to our show today. This is Mariana Cacciatore, and I've got with me today Kristen Otwell and Joan Burley of Art Explorers in Fort Bragg, California. They're two artists who have, for the last 20 years, been working with people with disabilities in their studio, giving these wonderful people an opportunity to express themselves through art, a place to grow through their participation in the visual arts. And we're going to talk, our show is called Ordinary People, Extraordinary Deeds. And what I've heard about these two women, they fit the perfect profile. People who look around and say, what is needed? And what is it? What is my gift? What is it that I can provide? And so in a few minutes, we're going to interview them. But first, I would like to talk with you a little bit about Bread for the Journey. You know, we're a nonprofit organization that's been around for about 25 years. And about a year ago, we decided that we wanted to really let more people in the world know what we were doing. We've been sort of under the radar screen for many, many years as a nonprofit organization doing grant making, micro grants. We've got these 20 chapters in 20 cities around the country. Each one of our chapters are run by volunteers. There are people who have come to us at one time or another and said, in one way or another, essentially, I recognize that giving back is part of a life well lived. And so what they wanted to do was to start a small giving circle in their local community. And Bread for the Journey serves as an incubator for them to be able to do that. We give them 501c3 status with the IRS. That means nonprofit status. That means you as a donor can take a tax deduction for your donation to those organizations. So we give them, they automatically become part of our organization. They become Bread for the Journey of Seattle or Bread for the Journey of Sonoma County or Bread for the Journey of Berkeley. We've got, as I said, many of them around the country. And then they raise a little bit of money locally. Usually the board members throw in some money and then they reach out to the rest of the community. And once they have a little pool of money, be it $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000, they find people in the community who are doing things that make that community more healthy or more beautiful or more just. And we give to a wide range of things because we believe a community needs a wide range of things. And so we give to arts and education and children and elder care and serving people with disabilities, as you'll learn more about today, and environmental needs. And so we give to small, usually small startups or small programs, sort of like us, that kind of fall under the radar screen of larger foundations. And so we find people in the community who are doing that. We meet with them over a cup of tea. We don't even want written grant proposals. We'll sit over a meal or a cup of tea and have them just tell us what it is they're doing. And if the fit is right, and if there's a need with that organization, and we've got what we can We've got what it is they need, be it $1,000 or $1,500, or sometimes it's volunteer help or a connection to somebody else in the community that, that somebody on our board can provide. Then we'll give that in a very easy and simple way. Over the years, as I said, we've been around for about 25 years. Over the years, when we added it all up, we sort of couldn't believe it. We've been responsible for giving away $4.5 million. Every little penny counts and helps. And about a year ago, as I said, we got to this place where we realized that we'd been operating kind of under the radar screen of most people. We were just sort of this quiet little organization that was doing this small grants program in cities all around the country. And we had this beautiful opportunity over all these years to meet people who are good-hearted people living in a community who look around and say, here's a need that needs to be filled, and I can do that. And, you know, it's one thing to add everything up in terms of dollars and say, yes, we've given away $4.5 million, but it doesn't even compare to the kind of people we have gotten to meet over these many years. And so we thought that this is the best way, perhaps this could be an interesting way, maybe the best way to get the word out. Let's introduce a larger audience to the people we get to interact with day in and day out. People like Kristen and Joan, who are doing something that really, that the community needs, that really improves the quality of life in that community. And so about a year ago, we started Bread for the Journey Radio. And these are the stories that we tell. Ordinary people, extraordinary deeds. So with that, let me introduce you. For nearly 20 years, Kristen Otwell and Joan Burley have given people living with disabilities a place to express themselves artistically without pressure, threat, or competitiveness. Their organization, Art Explorers in Fort Bragg, California, works with these artists in the making. And together they have found a community. When I was talking to Kristen, she said they sort of feel like family. And so, it seems to me that that the art studio is kind of a home for them, a second home for them, and a place where they have a freedom of personal expression, and they can grow by the opportunity to express themselves. And they also are able to host exhibits and show and sell their work. So this morning, it's my great pleasure to introduce you to Kristen Otwell and Joan Burley. Kristen, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Mariana.
Hi. And Joan, thanks. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mariana.
Great. Kristen, why don't we start with you? Tell us what your background is in creating art.
Okay. Well, I was a kid who always liked to do art, and my mother would always bring the little pad of paper along to keep me busy wherever we went. And when I got to go to college, I went to college at Mills in Oakland. I decided to major in art because I really didn't know what else I liked. So, I got a degree in art and then sort of didn't know what to do after that. Sort of floated around from one part-time boring job to another. And then I was looking for something new, and I had an acquaintance I'd gone to Mills with who said, I'm teaching at a program called Creative Growth in Oakland, and we need volunteers. If you have free time, why don't you come down? It's related to art. I didn't even really know what it was. And I went, and it was one of the very first programs ever, in California at least, for artists with disabilities. And I just used to go twice a week and just hang out and paint with the people there. It was a very large program. And I just really got drawn in. I mean, the people were, they were wonderful people. They were just so fun to be with. And it was just fun to sit there and do art with them. So I did that for a couple of years until while I did other jobs. And then it kind of led me into the whole field of working with the disabled. So I got sidetracked with working with young kids with severe disabilities, all the while doing my art, but not just sort of giving it away to my friends, basically. And then had the great fortune of, meeting the man I worked with and marrying him. And then he got a scholarship to study in England for a year. And I went along as his new wife, and I had a whole year just to paint, just to do whatever I wanted, and it was the biggest gift I could have ever had. Mm. I started doing, I love succulent plants. I started doing a series in watercolor. I guess I taught myself to do the watercolor. And I came back after a year with a body of work that I just, suddenly I thought of myself as an artist. And I got a little show together, and then I was actually invited to show at the, it used to be called the Nature Company. It was a big store in Berkeley. It's gone now. But I kind of launched my career. I mean, I had a little show at the Oakland Museum, and just one thing after another. And, you know, just started thinking, gee, maybe I can really do this. I took some courses in scientific illustration because I thought maybe I wanted to do that field. I didn't really ever pursue that afterwards, but it gave me a whole lot of background in drawing really carefully and looking closely at things. Then I moved up here left Oakland and moved to Mendocino, where it's kind of an artist community. There's so many artists here. I didn't sort of know that before, but kept doing my art. But I joined a women's support group, which is where I met Joan, and everything evolved after that. So I know the two are tied. I can't sort of separate my work path from my art path, so because they're all tied after a certain point.
Yeah, that often happens with people who love doing the work that they do. and I'm guessing this would be a really good time to ask Joan about her background and then lead us into the relationship that you developed with Kristen that helped you to open Art Explorers.
Okay, well, my background is a little different from Kristen's. I never did any art until I was 35 years old. It was something I was so scared of when I was in school. And for a career, I became a social worker. I was actually a child welfare worker in San Francisco. And then 1974 came along, and those were the days where people were, you know, breaking away from their jobs and moving. And it was a wonderful time. And so I quit my job, and I went to Guatemala for 6 months. And when I was in Guatemala, one time I was in a coffee shop, and I'd been writing letters, and I was feeling lonely. And for some reason or other, I have no idea why, I started drawing the tables and chairs. Now, of course, the drawing was very crude, but what it did was it took me totally out of myself, out of my loneliness. And I said, oh, this is very interesting. So when I came back, I had a friend in Mendocino. And I came here to live, and I started taking classes at the Mendocino Arts Center. And then at the College of the Redwoods had just started. And for money, I decided that I wasn't going to do any job that required, like working for the government, like I did before for social work. I was just going to try to not... Anyway, so I started cleaning houses, and I started doing things like that, or menial jobs around, just so I didn't have responsibility. I could devote, you know, learning art. And then I was lucky enough to get a scholarship for the only fine arts program that the Mendocino Art Center ever had. It was 3 years, from 1976 to 1979, and that was transformative. I mean, it's a very small group of people, wonderful teachers, and you talked about art, and I had this scholarship, but then for the third year, they said, well, you know, we can't give you a scholarship anymore. We want you to do something for this. So they had a bunch of books in a closet, and I said, well, what if I start a little library? And that was fine with them. So I started a library, and it just grew and grew. We had a Friends of the Library program. People donated wonderful art books, and I used to review books for the local magazine, and even this magazine in L.A., and it was my art education. I mean, I learned so much. Mm. I was so fortunate. So then I think that's about the time Thursday's Women started. And
Thursday's Women?
Thursday's Women was the women's art group that Kristen and I met in.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And let's see. And so anyway, so I had, we met there, and then I did need a real job after a while. So I had the background in social work, and somebody told me about this job opening at Harrison Street House, which it's not there anymore. It's a group home for developmentally disabled adults. So I started working there, and then Chris and I became friends from Thursday's Women. And I said, you know, I don't know if the residents there were six residents, and I said, I don't know if they'd be interested, but we could try it. Let's try. We volunteered in the beginning, just every other Saturday for a couple hours, teaching them art and working with them. And five of the six residents participated. And then after 2 years, we had enough work to do a local show, which was very well received. So.
You know, we're coming near a break time, but I want to just comment about something that I noticed. You know, there are some people who, you know, they graduate from college, they move into the world, and they know exactly what it is they want to do, and that's their guidance, and that's a direction. And I don't think that's the case with most people. I think most people have a story that's somehow similar to both of you, that we sort of things, in a sense, kind of happen in a random kind of way, or you do something sort of as a default because you don't want to do something else.
Right.
And sometimes later in your life, when you look back on it, you realize that there was some order to all of this. In some ways, it happened in my life as well. And it led you, it's like there's a larger force, you know, I'm not saying, you know, it's God or anything. I don't know what that larger force is, but sometimes it feels to me that there are forces much greater than us always at work, guiding and directing us to do the work that we were really meant to do. And it sounds to me like we're at this place, as we're hearing your story, where the two of you have come together and you are beginning the journey of the work that you were meant to do. And so to our listeners, stay with us. We're going to dive more deeply into this experience of working with people with disabilities and what they have, what they do at Art Explorers and what they have learned and how the world is a better place because they're in it. And if there's anybody out there who might have a little seedling of wanting to do something like this, we hope there are some nuggets you can take away from this interview. So stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Family caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back. We're here today on Bread for the Journey Radio, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with Kristen Otwell and Joan Burley of Art Explorers in Fort Bragg, California, a place where people with disabilities can come a few days a week and express themselves artistically and feel part of a community that feels a bit like home. So, Kristen, why don't you give us a visual picture of what Art Explorers Studio looks like?
Okay. Yeah. Great. Well, we are in our second location. The first, we were in a sort of a dive basement place for about 5 years, but we are now in our fifth year in a wonderful studio. It's not in the very downtown part of Fort Bragg, but it's like two blocks off of the main drag. So it's a good location. And it's a large open room that, I don't know how big it is, but it's big. And it's got those kind of floors that's fake wood so that you can clean them really well.
Mm-hmm.
We've just got a lot of big tables. And the place used to be a clothing store, so it had these two little dressing rooms, which have now become little work cubicles for a couple of artists. Some of the artists love to be in those tiny little spaces by themselves, and others like to be in the big room. Mm-hmm. So when you first come in, the front part of this big room is sort of our gallery. It's a small area, but that's where we hang all the work, the current work. And then we have a big counter, a sales counter, where we, you know, make sales. And then sort of behind that, all the tables start. And the place is just loaded with art. I mean, we've got every space on the wall covered with crafts, the paintings, clocks that they make. I mean, it's really like a riot of color, and it's very, very joyful looking when you come in, I think, because it's just happy. We have a little lunchroom in the back. It used to be, I think it was a storage room, but we turned it into our little lunchroom. We have a refrigerator and the lunch table there, and that's where the artists, they usually bring their lunch, or some of them buy it, and they eat back there, because we have a real strict rule about no food at the tables when you're working.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, drink, cups okay, you spilled coffee is one thing, but food, greasy fingers is bad, so that's for them. And we had to add a little a sink and a counter in the back of the room, because there was no place for washing, the brushes and everything.
Right.
So we had that added, and then we have a shared bathroom in the hallway with the business next door, which actually works out just fine. And, you know, we're close enough to things so that the students can walk and get a cup of coffee somewhere in town, or go pick up a lunch, or, you know.
That's great. And get public transportation there if they need to, and
yes,
things like
yes,
that. So you, I want to talk a little bit about your clients and the people you work with. You know, you have said that Art Explorers is a supportive and stimulating environment without pressure, threat, or competitiveness. So how do you make the environment safe?
Do you want to take this one, Joan?
Do you mean safe so it's not environment, something like
safe in terms of people aren't feeling pressure, they don't feel a sense of competitiveness, they don't feel like somebody's going to criticize their work. Safe in that way. What ground rules do you have set up that create that? Maybe it's not ground rules. Maybe it's something more basic than that. But I know that you must be doing something.
Well, each person gets to do what they want to do. We don't have the kind of studio where we say, okay, now draw a tree.
I understand that. Yeah, right.
It's totally individual.
Right.
And also, generally speaking, developmentally disabled adults are not raised like neurotypical. That's the word, I think. adults, where from childhood on in our society, most people are raised to be competitive and super achievers almost in today's society, whereas these people are not raised that way. So
right.
They don't have that background to have to overcome. So, I mean, we find that sometimes it's almost the opposite, that we have a couple of really good artists in our program, and they sell a lot of wonderful work, and they don't have an ego about it. Whereas, you know, it's very different. It's very different. So, and we try to praise everyone for what they do. You know, it's...
Do you ever have people with difficult personalities that show up where you have to do some sort of behavior modification or not?
Yes, we have had that. We have had that. And we spend time on that. You know, we have one student that has often showed up angry. And so we just figure in the beginning of the program, we have to take time with him in the office and talk to him and... he'll watch horror movies at night and then go to sleep, and then he comes in very angry. So we just talk to him, and then his anger changes. It's sort of a pattern that happens when he comes. But, yeah, we do have that. And then we do have sometimes they get upset with one another for little things or, you know, of course it wouldn't be to them a little thing, but whatever happens. But it seems that it's easily worked out. We're fortunate in that we don't have any really disruptive students. Well, they all sign a form in the very beginning that when they come into the program, that if their behavior is too disruptive for the program, they might be asked to leave. So we have that as part of our application process.
Mm-hmm.
We're not really like a babysitting program or anything. You know, they have to want to do art or have to want to learn to do art. I mean, there has to be some sort of desire there.
Right. So do they come in, are there some people who come in who know nothing about art and you will sit with them for lessons, actually?
Can I answer that one, I guess?
Sure.
Yeah, and most of these, our students have been through a public school system of one sort or another, and have been exposed to art. But, you know, the school kind of art is a lot different because it is those projects. We're all going to do the clowns now. And we're, you know, so they have never had that chance to just use it for themselves, I think. But there are a couple people for whom it's, you know, they basically have no skills with art. But I think part of this creating this supportive environment without the competitiveness and pressure and everything that we say has to do with, yeah, nurturing that. Whatever level they're at, whatever, you know, skills they have, we really try and encourage that and, you know, make a big deal out of it. That's really beautiful, that, you know, scribble, whatever it is. Wherever they start, we try and make that be just fine, because it is, of course, just fine. It's mm-hmm. wonderful that you're doing it at all. And so for a lot of them, they take off from there, and then they start developing what more that they want to do. If they ask and say, you know, I don't know how to draw this. I want to draw this cat and I need help. Well, then we will help them. But we never sit down and say we're going to have a lesson today on how to draw cats or something like that.
Right.
So, there have been a few people who've come who really aren't there for the art. And that comes to, you know, after a few months that becomes obvious. And then we ask them to move on because, you know, if they're not really interested at all in art, they just want to get attention or whatever they need is something else. So that has happened, and we've had people who've come and gone. But, you know, for the most part, wherever they're at, whatever skills they have, we try and help them feel good about those and move forward. And we do have a little bit of a ground rule, which is that, you know, we try not to ever criticize someone in a negative way. You know, we would never say, oh, that's a terrible drawing or, you know, why did you do that? We might give some constructive criticism about, gee, maybe if you added something in the background, you know, that would make it even better. You know, that kind of language is important. And So anyway, I think all those things tie together to make the place safe. Whoever you are and whatever your skill level is, it's great. You know, you're doing it and that's wonderful. So that's kind of the attitude we have.
Great. You know, you've said that the participants in your program feel like family to each other. What do you think you do to achieve that sense of intimacy?
Well, you know, if you've ever had the experience of doing something you love with a group of people, like, well, for John and I, it's art. If you work in a group with other people, there's something about doing something together that you all are excited about that just kind of opens you up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're more open to each other because you know you have this thing in common that you care about. Mm-hmm. Well, that feeling is definitely strong there. So I think that automatically gives people a bond. And then, you know, some of our artists have been coming to us for, well, there are a few who've been there for 20 years now. So they know each other really well, and they like each other. Well, they get on each other's nerves, too, but that's
right.
Just human nature. But basically, they really care about each other and are very supportive of each other's work. I mean, it's so sweet. They'll go. You'll hear them say, oh, that's really great. It's a great drawing you're doing. And, you know, just to hear them interact like that is really good. And so we just, you know, we try to encourage that ourselves. And we try to have some social events where they get to be together. You know, we have little openings and Christmas party and things like that so that they can just hang out together. They all need friends. We all need friends, and they do too. And they've really made some great friendships there. And I think basically they all respect each other.
Mm-hmm. And this is the way they bond. They bond through their common interest in art.
Yeah.
Right. Can you tell me a story of a person or two in your program whose like journey through artistic expression has transformed their life?
Why don't you tell about Mike?
I'd love to tell about Mike.
Mike.
He was a resident at Harrison Street House, and there were six residents, and he was the one in the very beginning who decided that he did not want to be part of this art that Chris and I were volunteering on Saturdays. So that was fine because it was volunteer. So about 6 months, after we've been doing it about 6 months, I happened to buy a used Mazda car. And it was new for me. And he came to me one day with this almost perfect drawing of the car. And I said, Mike, I said, you did this? I said, well, I'd like you to come to the Saturday program one time. If you don't like it, you never have to come again, but please, just one time. So he came that one time, and 20 years later, he's still with us, and he paints these wonderful watercolors, whimsical, delightful, and what's also interesting is Mike is legally blind, yet he is very observant. He's one of the most observant people I know. He can be out on the street. He can see things. He'll come back. And he'll draw what he has seen. It's amazing.
You know, my mother has macular degeneration, and they say that she's legally blind, but she moves to the world, you'd never know it. And she sees some things, she just sees them fuzzier than other people, and has to put them up really close to her face in order to see. How is it that he is legally blind and can see well enough to paint?
He has very thick glasses, but I don't know if that, he had a childhood illness very, very early in his life, which caused the legal blindness and the hearing aid, and he wears a hearing aid, but he's just observant. I mean, he's observant in minute details, and I can't understand that myself. I mean, I cannot go out in the community and see something happening or building and then come back and draw it from my memory. But he's able to do that.
You know, I interviewed Mark Nepo a few weeks ago, who has just written a book called 7,000 Ways to Listen. And as he begins the book, he's telling about how he he's in his 60s now, and how he was beginning to lose his hearing and how resistant he was to getting a hearing aid, and then finally he did. And but there's a kind of, in the process now of his life, there's a kind of heightened sense of listening because he's losing his hearing and has to use an aid of some sort. And it reminded me, as you were talking about him, that perhaps this is the same case because, you know, and maybe it's true with all of us when we have certain senses that we're losing. We work harder to create a heightened sense of that particular sense. And in this case,
that sounds very true. That sounds very real.
Yeah. So he's really paying attention to the details and can come
in. He really
and now,
pays attention to the details.
Were there any other stories that came to mind? I know we've got just another minute before we go to break again, but I love hearing stories. It kind of makes the general information come alive. Like, I feel like I know Mike now.
Sure, Kristen, can you, Mindy or Charles?
Yeah, well, Archie, I'd like to tell about Marvin.
Marvin, yeah.
That student's been with us from the very beginning, but for years, and I mean probably 15 years, he painted nothing but flowers. They're beautiful, but they're all exactly the same. The colors are a little different, but the format is pretty much the same. It's usually 8 to 11 flowers on a big page. And then we had a theme show. We decided, we should have a theme of birds. Well, we encouraged everybody to do birds. We never said you had to, but he decided he would try. And we had a wonderful staff member who was so helpful, so patient with him and encouraging him. He started painting birds, and then he wouldn't stop. Then we had another theme show of portraits. And again, with a lot of encouragement, he said he would try to paint portraits. And now he's painted, easily 20 portraits of Donny and Marie Osmond, because he loves Donny and Marie Osmond. But it's just been fun to see this guy be able to break out of this obsessive mode of only doing the flowers to doing something else. And it's really exciting. It seems like a small thing maybe, you know, to someone else, but to him, it's a huge jump. So, you know, we just don't know what he's going to do next, but it's pretty exciting.
Right. And with that, to our listening audience, we are going to take a short break. Stay with us. We've got one more segment. We'll be right back.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Michelle Kors 6 Degrees is your connected consciousness. 6 Degrees is what comes around, goes around radio. Committed to delivering a fresh perspective on thought-provoking, investigative information that can change your life. 6 Degrees connects you to the social and emotional scene and is your trusted advisor from finance to romance, mainstream to metaphysical. It's a positive, upbeat look at life, love, and the pursuit of passion. Get connected Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris is the portrait of the success story. Coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses, while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now,
back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here today talking with Kristen Otwell and Joan Burley of an organization called Art Explorers in Fort Bragg, California. Here they work with people who are living with disabilities as a studio for them to come and develop, to have creative expression, to develop their artistic skills, and they also have shows and sell their work. So I was thinking about, as I was preparing for this interview, I was thinking about how every human being really wants to be seen. They want to have their life validated. And sometimes that process begins with seeing oneself. And creating art, I think, does that in some way. We can stand back and see what has come out of us, out of our creativity. I'm hearing a little bit of background noise. Yeah, thanks. Sure. That's all right. Anyway, we stand back and we see what comes out of us, out of our creativity. And I'm wondering, do you agree, and is it more pronounced with people with disabilities or not?
That's a hard question. Well, you know, we do have one student who is nonverbal. And what comes out of him are the most gorgeous watercolors in the world. He just paints his water. You know, but he really doesn't seem to validate what he does. Maybe someday he will. But to us, it's just incredible that this color could come out so in his expression like that, you know. What was your question again? I'm sorry. Oh, to have their life.
It was really about how important I think every human being wants to be seen. And sometimes that process begins with seeing oneself. Like, you want to be seen by others, but when you create something and you put it down on paper, you actually see yourself. Like, when you take a photograph that's really good, this is a creative something that came out of me, or you make a collage. You know, this, oh my God, this is me on paper.
Right. Yes. Well, we have another student who, when he first came to us, well, over 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, you know, he didn't have any art skills at all to speak of at all. And now he really loves to draw portraits and has gotten very good.
And are those the portraits that are on your website and on your Facebook page?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Because I can tell there's a series of portrait work that looks like it comes from the same artist, and they were fun to look at.
Yeah. Well, those might be someone else's. There's two people that do a lot of portraits, but yeah, but I think I see that he sees himself now as an artist, which he certainly didn't before. And it makes him feel really good and really proud of himself. You know, I don't know that the self-realization is the same for, you know, maybe you or I, when we create something and we're able to say, oh, you know, I see a part of myself in here. It's not so obvious. We're more subtle. They're more straightforward and out there. So but for this Charles to be able to say, I'm an artist, come see my work. I mean, you know, it's
powerful. It's something. There's a sense of self-esteem that comes out of that, and pride, and yeah. Do participants meet together outside of Art Explorers?
Yeah, they do. They have friendships, and they have other programs that they attend where they see each other. But yeah, some of them have formed some very strong friendships and do just, you know, go to each other's house to hang out. So yeah.
Do you sometimes take field trips and visit other artists' studios?
We used to do more in the field trip department. We used to go to San Francisco with several times we've gone, but because of the costs and we don't receive quite as much money as we used to do from the state. We've sort of not done that for a while, but we've taken several times a group to the major museums in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I definitely go to local galleries a lot, and we have been to artist studios to visit. And so we try to do that as much as we can. But like I said, the major field trips we've kind of cut back on.
Did you ever, when that was happening, did you ever have a sense that they might see other people's art and it would influence their own art? Or is that too not such a direct line?
Not such a direct line, but certainly a line. I mean, because there are a couple artists who love to look at the art history, you know, art books that we have there, and, you know, really are influenced by those. So I think if it was a more, you know, if we were going to museums all the time, it would be more of a thing. But when we go, it was so exciting for them just to, oh, the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, that image showed up repeatedly in their artwork, the Golden Gate Bridge. And then lunch at the Hard Rock Cafe. I mean, that was them. So, you know, watch the art is the entire day. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the process of preparing for a show or an exhibition that features the art of your participants.
Well we make...
Go ahead, John.
Well, we have usually one or two card-making parties before a show. That means that our volunteers come and help us make cards. We make cards of every piece of art that we frame and put on the wall. And then we have a couple of framing sessions. You know, we have 20 artists, so each person for a regular show, our annual show, which is in May of every year, has one piece on the wall. Now, for the big show that Sierra went to in November, each person has generally three or four pieces framed. And that's a lot of work beforehand for that show. Mm-hmm. And we make cards for most all of those paintings, too. Mm-hmm.
So you take a photograph of the artwork and then make a greeting card that is then sold to the to people who come to the show?
Yes.
Well, we take cards a photo, or we use the original. And Kristen works with a local printer company and uses their color printer machine. And we make color laser prints, I guess they're called, and then we cut them out, and then we glue them on to card backs that we've purchased.
Got it.
Labor-intensive, but it works.
But all the participants get to work on it and make it do it themselves, correct?
Well,
or do you have other volunteers that come in and do that work?
Yeah, yes.
You have other volunteers that come in. Yeah, it's sort of perhaps fine work that is
exactly difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you are, the two of you, you are working artists yourselves. Is the Art Explorer storefront your studio as well, or do you work somewhere else?
No, we each work at home in our own studios.
You have your own studio, so that's your work. And how much time a week do you get to devote to your own art expression?
Mm-hmm. Never enough.
Well, lately I haven't had hardly any time at all, but something else has happened in my personal life that, you know, has taken up my time also besides Art Explorers.
I understand.
But both of us are in Partners Gallery, which is what we think a really good gallery, artist-administered, in Fort Bragg. So that's where we show our work.
Got it. And do you ever mix your work with some of your students' work when you have a group exhibit, or is it just the students' work?
Once we have four, there are four main artist teachers and two other people besides Kristen and I that work with the students, and we each showed one work in one of the student shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only time we've done that.
Mm-hmm. And what medium do the two of you work in? Joan, maybe you can talk a little bit about your work.
I do acrylic on paper is my medium.
Uh-huh. And Kristen?
I mostly do watercolors, sort of very realistic close-up things, so they're sort of abstract at the same time. But I do some other stuff, too. But that's my main thing.
And knowing what you do, each of you in your work, have you ever had one of the students come to you and say, I really want to get good at watercolors, for example? Can you show me, I mean, really ask you to teach your craft to them?
I have been asked to do the watercolor, and I find it very challenging, actually, because it's a very exacting medium, and it's hard to master at first, and students can get very frustrated by it. But at the same time, if I have a long time to work with just one person, I feel that I can, you know, really, really teach them something. But it's rare because it's a hard
medium to, yeah, I've played around a little bit with watercolors myself, and yeah, I can imagine it's difficult. If people want to make a contribution to Art Explorers to help you continue this work that you're doing, how do they do that?
Go ahead, John.
They could send us a check to Art Explorers, Post Office Box 2710, Fort Bragg, California, 95437.
Great. And if they wanted to make an online contribution, can they on your website? Do you have that feature as well?
Not that high tech yet.
Okay, that's not a problem. But your address is also, if they don't have a pen and pencil as they're listening to this, they can go to the website, which is artexplorers.org, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Right,
and
yeah.
And they're in Fort Bragg, California, and they can look up. And how do you get most of your funding? How do you fund this program?
The huge majority, I think it's 98 or 99% when I do the IRS return, comes from state funding that's channeled through the Department of Developmental Services and then through an agency called the Regional Center, which is actually a statewide nonprofit that administers funds to programs for the developmentally disabled. So large amount, most of all, our money comes from that. Very little in sales profits, but some. And then personal donations. So you get quite a few donations.
And participants themselves receive all their services free of charge.
Yes, they do. We have one
scholarship student that was partial
not.
Pay.
Yeah, he was not. In order to be receive the funding, you have to be disabled before the age of 18, whether you're born with disabilities or you had an accident or whatever.
Right.
This fellow was disabled after the age of 18, but he's a fabulous artist, and so we don't have state funding for him. He pays for part of his costs, and we do some scholarship fundraising for the rest.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And what is his name?
His name is Philip.
Philip. So if anybody in our listening audience wants to contribute to Philip's care, you can send your donation and say, this is for Philip.
Right. I wish you could meet Philip. He is a fabulous guy. It's one half of his brain was very severely injured in two accidents. But the other half is like amazing. He's witty. He writes poetry and he paints beautifully. He's just a really, really cool guy.
That's great. Well, I'm going to make my way up to Mendocino for the next time you have a show, or Fort Bragg when you have something in the spring. So I hope you'll keep me on your mailing list and keep us posted.
Do we have your mailing address? I hope.
I will send it to you in an email. I'll make sure you have it. So to our listening audience, this is the end of our show. And Kristen and Joan, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And it's been a delight to learn about your program.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. And Bread for the Journey is a nonprofit organization that could also use your support if you find a place in your heart to make a financial contribution, or if you'd like to start a chapter of Bread for the Journey in your town. Please go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. And I believe that if we all pitch in a little bit, we can change the world. And I close today, as I do every show, with this. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.